I'm Andrew Kavanagh from Offline Biz here with John Oshaka from musicmarketingmanifesto.com. John has appeared on Rolling Stone, CNN, Los Angeles Times, Newsweek, Time Magazine, Entertainment Weekly, US People, the Boston Phoenix, Entertainment Tonight, Inside Edition, Access Hollywood, many more shows. He's now an in-demand consultant and speaker at conferences and organizations worldwide, speaking about the new music business on and offline marketing strategies for musicians, social media, performing, songwriting, recording, and the new frontiers of independent music made possible by the internet. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Andrew Kavanagh from offlinebiz.com. I was the first person to get internet marketers to start using their services to market regular brick and mortar businesses, including musicians. And on our site, we actually do have a couple of independent musicians who have good six-figure incomes, even though you would never know their names. So welcome, John.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me. Wow, that's the first time I've heard my bio read back to me. That was cool.
Let's get started straight away and talk about why being a musician and is so much different these days, and what your take on is on why most musicians aren't actually making the money they should be making.
Right. Well, you know, my basically, and you know, anyone who's heard me talk before has probably heard me say this, but I think where most independent artists are failing is that they're essentially trying to copy what the major labels are doing. That is traditionally, for many decades, all that musicians have really been able to do, because things like direct response marketing, you know, while it was possible, it was fairly expensive, and you needed a fairly hard to find skill set or hard to develop skill set, you know, with traditional mail order direct response, and it just wasn't as conducive to relationship building and media sharing as the internet is. So traditionally, musicians have been just copying what the major labels do, and what the major labels do is they engage in these multi-million dollar branding strategies, the aim of which is to just spend so much money and create so much market awareness that you effectively affect purchase decisions. You know, you hear an artist one time, two times, three times, four times, see a poster somewhere, see a ad in the paper or a review in a magazine, and after a certain number of impressions, it affects your purchasing decisions. The next time you're on iTunes, maybe you see an ad there as the featured artist, or maybe it just sticks in your head. It causes you to actually check it out. And hey, if you're in a buying mood and you even remotely like the music, there's a decent chance you pick it up. And that does actually work when you spend, you know, $1 million, although it actually fails more than it works. However, those few successes make enough money to cover the losses of the majority of failures, even when spending that kind of money. So when an independent artist goes out, you know, they don't have budgets anywhere near that. They typically have just a couple of $1,000s, if that at all, and they try to do the same thing. They set up their websites and their social media accounts, and maybe they take an ad out in the local paper, and they do some shows, and they hope and wait for this tipping point where friends start telling friends start telling friends, and suddenly you're famous, and that just doesn't happen. I mean, I'm sure there are some fluke weird stories out there, but certainly on any kind of predictable level, it's a very unsound business model, and I think that's why musicians are struggling. They don't, on average, know anything about going out and trying to really market themselves. They barely even know what what that word even truthfully means. They just sort of focus on awareness and this broad term promotion. But what does work, and what I'm trying to teach people, and what I see working, I would guarantee it's probably behind some of those successes you just cited there, where you have these six-figure musicians in your camp. What does work is direct response marketing, and I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with the term, but it's the act of going out and really understanding this sales funnel and the principles of the sales funnel that was developed well over 100 years ago by the advertising pioneer E. St. Elmo Lewis, and it essentially is just understanding that a new prospect into your funnel is going to go through certain predictable or is going to have certain predictable psychological responses once presented with a call to action. And if you can successfully walk a person through those different points in the funnel, which were at least defined originally as awareness, interest, desire, and action, that you will then get a predictable number of sales coming out the other end. And musicians can do this, in fact, very well, because I think music and artistry is so complementary to relationship building. And again, the internet helps one, is a fantastic medium for walking a person through a media-based sales funnel. And so, long story short, I've been finding that it works very well. I'm seeing conversion rates much higher than most industries, most niches. And it's incredibly rewarding, because at the end of the day, you're building a real and deeper relationship with a smaller number of people. But if done well, you're able to make a living. And anyone can really do this. You don't need that manager or that lawyer or that record label. You know, certainly a team is helpful, but you don't need a publicist and all these things that cost so much money and have such huge barriers to entry. Instead, all you need is, you know, a squeeze page, an autoresponder, and you know, a decent ability to communicate with people and share your art.
And while we're on the topic of funnels, there's a sales funnel, but also one of the biggest mistakes I see most musicians making is they're trying to make money out of a $1 or $20 product, and it's really difficult to do. We talk about the concept of a product funnel for musicians and artists. So, in other words,
yes.
Actually, I'll give you a story. I was working with a restaurant, and I think, just to give you an idea of how a marketer thinks, we think restaurants have really small transaction values. So we think only making $100 or $200 a sale, it's a really small transaction value, and it's actually hard to make money that way. So if you're trying to do it with $1 or $20 a sale, you're really struggling. Anyway, I had an incredible piece of luck when I was working with a restaurant, and he said to me, you know, I'm actually booking quite a few Christmas work parties. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, these people need to have a place where they can hold their work parties for a big group, and they're in a night they're spending $3,000 or $4,000. And lights went on in my head, and I said, right, so from here on out, we're going to focus on making sure that we, on the internet, if anybody's looking for a work party, they find you, and we're going to start calling, we hire someone to start calling all these places a few months before Christmas, just before they start thinking about booking. And anyway, long story short, that restaurant basically survives from the money it makes just over 3 months. It survives through the whole off season, because they're living in a tourist town, just on the money they make from Christmas work parties. And the point is, because they have a sale that's $3,000 or $4,000 instead of $100 or $200, they make a tremendous amount of money. And if we're looking at the music industry and being an artist, you really need to have sales that are beyond $1 or $20 if you want to make some good money.
Sure.
And one thing that I loved about your site, and I'll give people a link, was there was a whole page on the possibilities of different products or services that you could sell at higher prices. So could we talk about that briefly?
Yeah. You know, there's a couple primary challenges to selling music, and, you know, one is that there's an enormous amount of competition. You know, there are millions of artists out there. And two, you know, it's not problem solution based like traditional products. And three, and most significantly, the price point is extremely low. Like you say, you know, an album, a digital album, on average sells for about $10 US. And that is just not a lot of money to work with. And most artists are selling that through, you know, iTunes, CD Baby, and they're taking a cut off of that. So you're dealing with, I actually don't even remember off the top of my head what the current cuts are, but, you know, a good fraction less. And the real end game, I think, for any business, including musicians, is to be able to afford to pay for advertising. That's when you can really scale, because you can do a lot going out and pounding the pavement and building your list through live events and things like that. And you can certainly do a lot with SEO, which provides its own sort of challenges. And there are expenses, obviously, to any kind of aggressive SEO campaign. But the real end game is to be able to turn on some paid advertising, pay X amount per click, and know that you're going to, you know, hopefully make double that, or at least break even on your front line products or the front end, and build this list and profit from them down the road. So it's very, very difficult and pretty close to impossible when you're just selling a $10 CD. I have a couple of clients that have pulled it off. I was actually kind of shocked when they did it. It was really impressive to be able to turn a profit on those front line products with PPC, but at 10 bucks a piece. But so yeah, what I really recommend people do is, you know, almost to a certain extent, look at that album as a loss leader. I mean, it's not a loss leader because you're bringing in money, but the act of or the process of selling is really just the process of overcoming resistance, you know. And I know you know that, but it's really just the process of figuring out what are the different, you know, when you present a person with a call to action, be it to buy something or to give their email address or whatever it is, there's a natural process that is, you know, for our own benefit and built into our survival mechanisms to throw up reasons why that's not a good idea. You know, if someone says, hey, why don't you walk down this dark alley with me in the middle of the night? If we didn't have that part of our brain that said, wait, this isn't a good idea, this guy's going to rob me, then we'd all be, you know, taken advantage of and killed. So we've got this in our brain. So when you sell, a prospect throws up that same kind of resistance, and it's our job to figure out what that resistance is and then communicate about all of those points and overcome that resistance and to get them to buy. And I see a lot of artists offering product options, meaning right on the front, on the main offer page, instead of just offering a CD, you'll have this long list, this long menu list of items, much like a Kickstarter page where you can buy an album for $10 or get an album and a t-shirt for $30, and the list will go all the way up to maybe a producer credit for $1,000 and so forth. And that's fine, and there's a place for that, particularly when you're marketing to existing fans and people who already know you. But what I kind of like to focus on is just trying to overcome the smallest amount of resistance possible and get people to make that entry-level purchase, you know, an album for 10 bucks or 15 bucks if it's a physical album. But once you've overcome that resistance and a person has made the decision to purchase your album, they've effectively said to themselves that, okay, all things taken into consideration, I do believe that this guy or girl's music is worth, you know, 10 songs are in fact worth $10, and I'd like to have them for whatever reason. And so they pull out their credit card and they give you their information, and you've overcome that resistance. Now you take them, rather than just to a, hey, thanks for the order. And by the way, most artists aren't even doing that. They're just sending people to iTunes or CD Baby, where they're effectively handing over their customers to somebody else, and they're not controlling the process at all. They cannot do what I'm about to describe. But if you are taking orders yourself, you certainly can, and obviously making the maximum amount of money per transaction as well. But you don't take a person to a, hey, thanks for the order, here is your download. You take them to a new page that might say, you know, at the top, wait, don't close this page. Before I take you to your download, I've got a special offer for you. And then there are a lot of different ways you can approach an upsell. And by the way, there are sort of downsells, and you can kind of go lateral as well. But typically we talk about an upsell where if someone has said that, yes, I think 10 songs are worth $10, if we now position them with, say, some kind of something that possesses overwhelmingly more value. So let's say you've got a bucket offer of some kind. You've got this membership site where you've got 100 songs for just $40. Well, in order for that person to say to themselves, no, I don't want that, they have to work kind of counter to the same logic that they just applied to their initial decision. And that's a funny place to be psychologically. We don't want to just admit to ourselves after parting with $10 that was a dumb thing to do. So it's easier to say, well, that was worth $10. And, you know, remember, we're boiling this down to some pretty brutal terms here. And the ultimate goal is that we're selling a product that we believe in and giving people a fantastic deal. But if a person, again, has said that the 10 songs is worth $10, then it becomes hopefully very obvious that 100 songs is easily worth $40. And as we see in most markets, you'll see a 20 to 30% conversion rate on those upsells. And depending on how you slide the numbers, very often you can make more money on your upsells than you do on that initial offer. So people who aren't applying this step are losing out tremendously. particularly artists, you can absolutely double your money just on these upsells. And if you introduce continuity programs, say a membership site or some kind of a, you know, song a month program or whatever it is that you could put together. I heard the White Stripes were doing something like just a box of stuff, and you didn't know what you were going to get, but it was just some cool box of White Stripes memorabilia and stuff that they'd send you each month. And again, I haven't actually looked into that. I've just sort of heard it through the grapevine, but that's a great example of these continuity programs and things you can do that can bring in potentially many times more money than that initial offer. And when we're talking about things like, well, marketing and paid advertising, it's all about reducing this to some set of predictable numbers so that we can truly scale up. But it doesn't even really stop there. Then the goal for a musician, at least, would really be to, well, in addition to promoting future albums and merchandise and things that you might feel like releasing along the lines, we also really want to come up with some kind of a high ticket item. And there are a number of different ways you can do this, but one obvious one for musicians has been house concerts. Mm. A house concert is when instead of playing a club where you have to get 100 people to effectively give you $10 to come to your show or make 100 new conversions each time you play, you get a fan to pay you, say, $500 or $1,000 or even nothing, because you can make so much money in merch sales because of the intimacy of these events. But usually you can command a few hundred bucks, if not. I have a friend charging $1,000 show, and he does two or three a day and just goes out on tour for a couple months a year and makes six figures plus just doing house concerts. But by introducing something like that into your funnel as a promotion, where you send out an email saying, hey guys, if you like my stuff, I'll come to your house and put on a concert for you and your friends, you and your family, just you, whatever you want. You can sell tickets, and you could even profit off of this. You're the boss, you just pay me my fee and I'll come and we'll do these cool intimate little concerts. The fans love it. They get to meet you and hang out with you. They are fantastic relationship building experiences. You're not some guy off in some smoky backstage area that the fans never meet. You really become a lifelong friend to some of these people. And the biggest point of all is it becomes a single transaction that can net you possibly, you know, $1,000 or more. And as I say, merchandise sales are through the roof on these things. Just about everybody, or at least a significant percentage of the people that come to these events, buys a CD to remember the event by and to support the artist. So there, and following those, remember those conversion rates that we talked about earlier, you might not see a 20 or 30% conversion rate on an upsell of this size, but let's say you ran it as a standalone promotion down the line after that initial order took place, because it is a lot of money to expect a new buyer to purchase. But if just something like 5% of your customers took you up on that, that is a lot of money. And once again, I don't have the breakdown. I've given a few talks on this and have some slides that I put together, but you can see that very often you can make more money on these upsells than you would on that primary and upsell offer put together. Or sorry, these high ticket upsells. And so that's kind of the idea, is that you have this funnel that starts very small with a very small level of resistance to overcome, and you kind of increase the price point usually, although again, downsells have their place and stuff, but you increase the income earned, or the average income earned off of each subscriber, tremendously with each new promotion that you add to the funnel. And that's really at the end of the day, that's what matters, is the subscriber value, or at least that's the statistic that I look at, is that I want to know what that subscriber value is. Because let's say if I'm converting at 10%, which would be, by the way, extremely high, 10% of the people to sign up for my list. I'm not talking about people to actually just click on an offer page, but of my total list. And I have had some promotions convert that high, but if I 10%, and I paid $1, make $10, I wouldn't be getting anywhere. But if I could add that upsell and then maybe get a couple takers on some house concerts, I might be able to bump that subscriber value up to, say, $5. And in doing so, I'm suddenly generating enough money per subscriber that I can really start exploring all kinds of paid advertising opportunities and scale up to any degree that I want. And at that point, you truly don't need a record label. You'd really have to think long and hard as to whether or not you'd want one. They would purely be a bank at this point. But if you do want one, it's fantastic, because that is really how you're opening doors these days anyway, is by showing that you have a profitable model, that all they need to do is get behind and use their distribution and marketing channels to take it to even the next level. So I don't know, that was a long speech, but that answer your question?
That's great. The reality is most modern record labels aren't going to sign you unless you don't really need them. So that's
true.
The house concerts, I think, a great idea, and we didn't go in detail, but effectively your fans could actually be making money by charging people to come to those house concerts. That's a double driver there. In other words, you have people, not only are you huge fans, but can also make money out of being a huge fans, or just do the house concert because they love you and pay you themselves. The other side of it, when we're talking about merchandise, we didn't go into much detail, but one of the problems musicians have that I see is that all their merchandise, if it's CDs and so forth, they have to produce themselves. So when you're getting off into some other tangents, like T-shirts and so forth, underpants, signed underpants, whatever, it doesn't really matter. When it really comes down to it, people just want a piece of you. So breaking out of the idea that the only thing you can sell is CDs and selling other products that don't require so much time and effort to create is a huge thing, I think. And also thinking bigger, because people, in terms of a product funnel, there's plenty of people who buy a $10 product, but there's also a good percentage of people who buy a $30, $40, $50 product, and the percentage of people who buy a $200, $300 product, percentage of people who buy a $500 product. You want to cover all those bases, because when it comes down to it, if you're in front of a fan, why not give yourself the maximum chance of making a good amount of money, but also give them the maximum chance of getting what they want, which is a small piece of you that they can remember you by. You know, if particularly if you're playing live, there's an emotional thing that goes on there inside people, and you're producing memories for them. They want something they can remember the event by. And if you're selling online, well, it's the same basic concept. They want a piece of you they can remember you by, that they might hang on their wall, or that they might be able to show friends. And I know you have a list here of a few different things. Selling your demos, a membership site, which is an interesting idea, because you only have to sell it once, and then in theory you can keep getting paid over and over for years from people who stay members. Custom written songs, fan books, signed and limited artwork. I thought that was an interesting idea. But anything that, then you're getting up into the higher price range, anything that is a piece of you, anything that's signed, for a lot of artists that can be a huge thing. And then the old-fashioned merchandise like T-shirts and so forth. Now, let's talk about the other most important principle, and this is probably the last thing we'll cover, and that is the foundational marketing strategy, which a lot of people don't really understand, which is probably why they don't do anywhere near as well as they could. In fact, I noticed this a lot with young musicians. When I was young and the standard was a piano bar or very small events, which were quite intimate, and it was kind of disco had started, but it's showing my age now. Disco had started, but it hadn't really got going as the main place to go. Back then, artists knew how to work a room, which is basically you go around and talk to everybody and build a relationship with them so they turn up the next time. So when we're talking marketing, one of the major fundamentals, probably the major fundamental of marketing, is just building a relationship with people. The most valuable asset you have is the depth of the relationships you've built, in the case of a musician, with your fans. And also, if you're a musician, you actually have a few different areas where you need to build relationships, because if you're playing venues, you need to build a relationship with the person running the venue, and those kinds of relationships too. But can we talk about how you might be building relationships? Oh, actually, I wanted to talk just briefly. This is a big mistake I see people making, musicians making, is when they're actually at an event. they're playing somewhere and they're already building the strongest relationship probably that they ever will, which is when they're on stage and actually performing. That's about as deep an emotional experience their fan is ever going to have. They walk off the stage and that's the end of it. They don't talk to the fans, they don't sell them products, they don't have any way of getting those fans who've already seen them and are at the peak emotional state into any kind of product funnel. So if I was managing or helping an artist, I would say the most important thing you can do is at any place where you're playing is to get them onto your email list, sell them a product, and on every product that you can put a QR code and a URL for your website so that people can go in and become part of your email list. But I know you must have some insights on building relationships, so I'll let you talk about that side of things, John.
Yeah, a couple things there. One, you talk about the live shows, and that's a huge one because those leads that you pick up at a live show are the most valuable leads you'll ever get. They're people who you have hopefully connected with. You know, often you've talked to them. At the very least, they've seen you play. They know that you're the real deal, or hopefully you are. And, you know, there's already such a deep some stranger who had an ad on Facebook and you clicked on it and had a moment of curiosity. And the importance of a list. And I think most musicians are still really missing the boat there. And I get a lot of questions about that. You know, how can I capture these email addresses short of hiring someone to walk around the room, and which most people can't really do. Now, the obvious one is to just do it yourself while you're walking around. But one thing you can do, which is something that not too many musicians are doing, is through text message marketing. You can actually go and have your audience, you create a short code and have people send a text message to a short code and automatically get a link back, and that link can be to a mobile optimized squeeze page. So you can literally give these shout outs from the stage and tell everyone, hey, I want to give you my single for free. Just text free single to whatever short code you create, and then you send them to your squeeze page and do a great job of building up the list that way. Of course, if you are working the merch table or working the room, you can do things through squeeze pages on your mobile phones and everything else. But in terms of actually building the relationship, I think this is an area that musicians really struggle with for some reason. It's sort of ironic, I think, that they do, because they're creating art. It isn't a product. They should have plenty to say about themselves on the topic. But most musicians seem to really freeze up when it comes to what they should send to their list. And all you typically see is really kind of bad spam. You know, I get these musicians actually going and scraping people's email addresses and sending you, like, buy my album on iTunes, and that's about all there is to the messages they send out. And then you get others that do try to build that relationship, but all they really have to say is, I'm in the studio again. And, you know, this is direct response marketing. This isn't sending an email newsletter to your friends and family. Like, you got to really hook people and pull them in. And nobody cares about another download. They don't care that you're in the studio. They don't care that you're playing live. You know, obviously there are exceptions to this, and on some level, let's hope that they care. But as a general rule, and as in terms of engaging content that is going to keep people glued to your quote unquote channel, because at the end of the day, that is what we're trying to do with our email list, is create an engaging channel. That kind of content is not going to do it. What I really think people need to do is kind of find this parallel line, this parallel sort of idea, niche, voice that runs alongside that actually speaks more specifically to the target demographic and their general interests, as opposed to pitching your music specifically, or even you as an artist specifically. And what I mean by that is, let's say you're a punk rock artist, just as an example. If you if you were sending out tweets and email blasts talking about, you know, camping out I'm totally freezing on the term. You know, that big protest they were doing on Wall Street. Help me out here.
Occupy.
There you go. The Occupy movement. If sending out emails from your freezing cold tent and on Wall Street, talking about what you're doing, and obviously weaving your music and your life as a musician in and out of that, but doing things like that that might be really engaging to the overall more broader lifestyle interests of your target demographic. You know, I think you do a whole lot better And so for a country artist, obviously that would be very different. You might have a farm and you might work on that farm and you might kind of be talking about life on the farm, or if you're a Christian artist, obviously your faith would be woven into that. But finding something that is substantive beyond just I'm in the studio again and crafting these messages that kind of pull people into that world and kind of accomplish two things. One, just create engaging videos and stories that make people want to watch or read, two, build that bond, you know, show people that you are just like them and you are a true leader of a tribe, a hypothetical tribe that they'd like to be a part of. And I think that's the key challenge that most musicians are up against, and they seem to really just freeze up, because I see the same email messages all day long. Buy my album now, or I'm in the studio again. And every once in a while, you find these musicians who are just really great at turning their life into a story. And again, you leave out the stuff that really doesn't pertain to your demographics interest. You might be into gardening, but you might be a punk rock artist. You can leave the gardening out, you know, because that's not going to be something in common to your demographics general interest.
Or make it really funny. I'm out here gardening and smash the ground or something. I mean, anything that's in context of what you do, you know. The other thing is that what really comes down to when you're an artist is you're an entertainer. So any message you send out is supposed to entertain and engage people. That's consistent with what you do, so it shouldn't be that difficult. Telling jokes. I saw a really good video from Montgomery Gentry where they were in Australia. You'll probably laugh at this too, because you have Vegemite there in New Zealand too. And at the start of the video, he goes, we're going to eat some Vegemite. The video goes on to show his song. He goes, keep waiting to the end of the video because we're going to eat some Vegemite. And he's like, we're in Australia. And at the end of the video, he goes, here I am, a hillbilly, going to eat a Vegemite sandwich, whatever you call it. And he bites into it. And he's chewing. And he chews slower and slower. And you can see his eyes are starting to water. And he's going. And then he goes, good day, mate. it's just hilarious.
Right.
Yeah, only Australians are going to get that joke. Vegemite, for the record, if you're not used to it, it tastes pretty much like chewing on sump oil mixed with some hideous substance. It's pretty awful for people not used to it. So any Australian, just cracked up.
For us.
Yeah. Whereas when we were kids, we would get a whole tablespoons full of it and suck on it for hours, wouldn't worry us at all. So Australians think that's hilarious. The point being, and you can tell jokes, you can do anything as part of that, as sending to your list. You can have videos, audios, pictures of you. Anything that's interesting and engaging is going to be great for an entertainer. Basically, what you want, if you're going to be sending an email to your list, and this is true across every business, is you want them to be excited when they get an email from you. They want to be excited to open it for whatever reason. It's as simple as that. So. That's not really complicated.
Yeah, no, and you're right, and there are a lot of ways you can do it. You could do it, absolutely, by just being funny and creating funny videos and funny music. You could do it by being very deep and, like I say, sending in these thought-provoking sort of blog posts or whatever, reporting in from the front lines of your life, so to speak. There really are a lot of ways you can do it, but like you say, it's creating a channel that people can – I don't know, almost like a television channel where it's the commercials that fuel the TV programs that we watch so that the advertisers can air their commercials, you know, and that's kind of what we're trying to do on some level with our email addresses. We're trying to create this engaging channel, send out this content that people would watch regardless of, you know, the fact that you're asking them to, regardless of the fact that you're selling anything whatsoever, they would watch it or read it or whatever medium you're using, they would engage with it because it was just interesting. And then if you can accomplish that, then you can afford yourself the right to promote to these people once in a while. And obviously if they are engaging like that, there's going to be a pretty high willingness to take the action that you ask them to take, which hopefully means buy your stuff.
And we'll talk just briefly on one last topic, which is the whole topic of the building relationships free. One thing I've noticed a lot of the really committed artists are doing is building relationships using Facebook and other free channels. And these guys, I take my hats off to them because it's not the way I would do it, but they will answer every single Facebook email, and they could amount to several hours a day. Not, as I said, it's a huge time commitment, but if you are starting off, as a lot of musicians are, with no money at all, I think it's really important to understand that the more deeper relationships you build, the more you build a human contact with other people, the quicker you're going to get from zero to making good money, as long as you have some kind of product funnel in place where you can actually capitalize on those relationships you've built. So what tips would you have in those areas, things like Facebook and the other free market or so-called free marketing channels, because there's effort involved, so it's obviously not free.
Right. Well, I'm glad you said that it's not the way you would do it, because when you brought up Facebook, I went, uh-oh, Andrew's going to say that Facebook is, all important, and I'm going to have to disagree. Because, they have their place, but for sure. And there are some people who really are masters of social media and have built really big, loyal buying audiences through those mediums. So there's nothing wrong with them. I personally don't focus on social media at all. I think it's a, well, I mean, I've dabbled in just about every type of marketing you can imagine, and I have used semi-automated tools to drive subscribers to squeeze pages using things like Twitter and all that. But for the most part, I don't, and especially these days with my current businesses that I'm passionate about and focus in, and even my music, I don't do any of the tricks or anything like that. I don't have any ultra, at least currently, any real engaged marketing strategy. I use Facebook and Twitter for what they're intended to be used for, which is relationship enhancing tools. I think what I like about Facebook or Twitter is that when someone connects with you via email, then you can connect with them on one of those social platforms. And when they see these little blurbs coming out, it reminds them, and it's easy to send out these blurbs because they're less offensive. You couldn't, well, some do, but I don't think an artist could pull off sending out an email to their fans every single day. But you certainly could send out a tweet, 5 times a day, and it wouldn't rub anyone wrong if they were, remotely interesting. So by using these and connecting with people in these other modalities like that, you sort of reinforce the relationship and keep them reminded of who you are and that you're out there, and give them another way to communicate and connect with you. But really, it's just that it strengthens the relationship and makes them more likely to buy when you ultimately send that email promotion out. But like I have a band page for myself as an artist. I've never done any, like, I've never even told anyone it's out there. Like, it just sits there getting, has a relatively small number of followers. I do use my personal profile, and I have a decent amount of friends there that are sort of business connections and fans and things like that. And I've used Twitter a bit more for marketing and trying to connect with people. But for me, it's all email. I learned a long time ago that I could spend many, many hours on social media, and at the end, I'd see a fraction of the return that I would through email. So my focus is there. But I do think they're, again, a great place to sort of just send out these blurbs and keep people engaged in a less intrusive way. There are different strategies. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are fan page strategies that certainly work, but I have not focused on them. To me, it's all direct response and it's all email, because it just gets more attention, more focused attention, and higher conversion rates, at least in my experience.
Yeah, and the other point I'd make is don't put all your marketing efforts into a site that's not yours.
Yeah, there you go.
So I remember the early days in Facebook when I was first starting, and we had an expert Facebook expert talk at a seminar, and his whole story was, oh, I built up 1 million fans, and then that profile got deleted, so I lost all those. And people forget, I mean, just in seconds, Facebook can decide something you're doing on your Facebook profile they don't like, and everything you've done is lost. So
Yeah.
any external site like Facebook, Music Baby, iTunes, all those, always think of them as an external site. You don't have control over your clients until they're on your email list and they're coming to your site. You want to be thinking in terms of building your business, not somebody else's.
I literally have subscribers on my music mailing list from probably 10 years ago that still buy things. They still come to shows. They have me do house concerts, you know, from 10 years ago. Like, there's nothing more powerful. And I don't think a single person has probably even checked out my MySpace page in a year, you know. Right. I mean, I have no idea what's going on there. I haven't checked out my MySpace page in a year. So yeah, totally. It's really about things that you can control and not giving that power to somebody else. I mean, even just EdgeRank alone, like, you know, all Facebook needs to do is change that algorithm and boom, you could lose everything. So there's, I think, again, they're great tools, but I wouldn't focus my time, energy, and money into them as opposed to email. You know, but everything, for every rule, there's an exception, because, like I say, there are some fan page strategies that I'm kind of looking at, but they do actually involve squeeze pages and ultimately getting people over to my list. Case study I did a long time ago was I went in pretty quickly to show people, you know, how it could be done. I got about 5,000 Facebook likes on the Music Marketing Manifesto page in just a few days or something, because people were always wondering how they can get a lot of likes. So I did that, and then this is when I just kind of started the Music Marketing Manifesto thing, and at the time only had about 5,000, had about the same number of email subscribers. Now I'm about 13,000, but sent out an email to the list and then sent out a message to the Facebook fans, and I got something like 150 clicks on the Facebook message while I got 1,500 clicks on the email message. And if that alone didn't kind of show you where you should be putting your money, then I don't know what does.
Yeah, so thinking of external sites as a way to bring people into your site, onto your email list, is often a very good mindset. Sure. Do you have... since we'll finish there, but before we go, do you have one major tip you'd like to give people to take away from this audio?
You know, I didn't even really think about this. I don't know if I was supposed to prepare an answer, but I don't have one. let's see. What's one big tip that I can give people? I'm totally trying to simultaneously think and give you no dead air for your listeners. a tricky challenge. Let's see, what have I been messing with that I really loved recently? This is something I've only been really kind of looking at for a little while now, but I'm sure you're familiar with it, but retargeting is really something that I think musicians are not doing at all and could really benefit from retargeting. For anyone who's not familiar with it, is there are several retargeting networks out there, like retargeter.com, and they allow you to cookie your own traffic, so that, in other words, put some code on your site so when someone comes on your site, a cookie is laid on their computer, and then when that same person is browsing the web, your ads will display to them across the web through all of these many, many, many partners out there. You know, usually these networks are even larger than Google AdSense networks are. They're huge, huge networks. So we're talking massive sites in many instances, like Huffington Post and things like that, major sites. So what for musicians who, you know, there's a part of us that are all, you know, we want to be famous. That's a big part of it. And we can't afford to waste a lot of money like the major labels do, just spreading our money all across, you know, the web or even the offline world. It allows us to basically be famous in a bubble without a lot of waste. You can go and take all those people who haven't bought your album, cookie them, and then they start kind of going out there doing their thing on the web and seeing your ads popping up over and over again, and it starts to create that same sort of branding thing we were talking about that the major labels are doing, where you make so much, create so much market awareness that it affects purchasing decisions. You can kind of do that without the waste of just spending, like, if you were to advertise on that website, you'd be hitting it.
Well, looks like you've disappeared.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, you're back.
I'll take from the broad thing. if you had just run an ad on, say, the Huffington Post, that would be a very, very broad audience that would be exposed to your stuff, and many of them would not be interested in your kind of music. However, if you cookied those people when they were coming to your site, maybe because of a very targeted paid advertising campaign that you were running, something like that, when that you know that this prospect was qualified, you know that they matched your target demographic, and when they went out there and started exploring the rest of the web and started seeing your ads over and over and over again, they would start thinking to themselves, well, hey, that Joe Blow guy that I saw the other day and didn't sign up for his free music, he must be a big deal because I'm seeing his ad everywhere. And again, it's just a really it can be pricey, and like, you know, pay-per-click advertising, you got to really know what you're doing. You got to know your metrics. You got to know your subscriber value. But if you do, and depending on what you're bidding on, you can get the price you need, I think retargeting is a really powerful strategy that I'm yet to meet a musician who's doing it. So that, I suppose, could be my tip for the day.
And I'll give musicians too, and the people working with musicians on our site probably pick up on this one pretty easily. The number one, build relationships with people, and in particular, make sure you get them onto an email list and get their contact details, just because you can mail to people too. For example, if you were doing house parties, house concerts, you could send some of your more dedicated fans an actual mail or phone them up and tell them you're doing it. And the second side of that is having a decent product funnel, so you have products that are and services you can sell that are going up into the 50, 100, 200, 500, and even preferably the thousands as well, so that you can actually make a good living instead of struggling trying to sell $10, $20 CDs.